of the NYU Langone Medical Center. This is Doctor Radio. This is Sirius XM Doctor Radio.
From the heart of the NYU Langone Medical Center, this is Sexual Health and Gynecology with Dr. Miriam Green.
Welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Miriam Green. This is the Sexual Health and Gynecology Show here at Sirius XM. We are channeled by the NYU Langone Medical Center, and we are on Sirius XM channel 110 on the dial. I'm Dr. Miriam Green here on this gloomy but warm Monday. Oh, I'm not supposed to say the dates, right? I always forget. My producer, Lori Park, is always going, what are you saying the day for? Anyway, it is a gloomy day, but it is warm, and we're very happy. We're coming on to spring in a couple of weeks, and I think we have a wonderful show for you today. I have a guest in my studio. You know how I love my studio guests, and this gentleman came all the way from Austin, Texas, which is a really cool and hip place. I think actually Bush originally is from Austin, or right? Isn't W from there? And it's a cool town and a cool place. And it's Dr. Kalen Silverberg. I'm not supposed to say Mark? No. Kalen Mark Silverberg?
I mean, my parents would be happy if you did.
But... doesn't he have a great voice? He could do a radio show, right? So, Kalen Silverberg, he's a clinical assistant professor in the department. Oh, I'm sorry, you got a promotion. You're a clinical associate professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the Division of Reproductive Endocrine Infertility at the University of Texas Dell. Is that for Jeffrey Dell?
Michael Dell.
Mike, whatever he is.
Right.
He's rich. Dell Medical School. And he is also the medical director of Texas Fertility Center and medical director of Ovation Fertility in Austin. Is that correct? Did
correct.
I say that correct?
Correct.
It's so exciting. He's very, very wonderful and good friends. He wouldn't get off the phone with Dr. James Griffo, who is our head of our department or, you know, fertility center here at the NYU Langone Medical Center. So they're good buddies, which is good to know because we like to have a lot of connections, I think, all over the country and know that people around us and around the country are just as good as our boy, Dr. Griffo.
And Jamie's world class. He's really terrific.
Yeah. And so are you, obviously, just by, you know, being here and being on the show. So we, you know, before the show, we were going to be talking about pre-implantation IVF. Is that correct?
It's genetic testing. It's a way that we can actually screen embryos before we transfer them into the uterus.
Okay, so when you say, so you're screening the genetics. What does that mean for the layperson that knows absolutely nothing, the listener?
Absolutely. So there's a couple of different types, and it's confusing because all these different terms have been developed. So one is pre-implantation genetic screening. People refer to that as PGS. The other is pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. People refer to that as PGD.
Okay, I just wanted to tell you something. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well,
so
a lot
now
of people
you have
don't.
To tell me about this. What is PGS? What is PGS?
Well, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to back up even a step further.
Oh,
so
thank
you. We call it PGT, not to be confusing, but to be more simple. So we call it pre-implantation genetic testing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, got that.
And that just makes it a lot more simple because people confuse the terms all the time. What PGD was meant to be was when we know that we have a couple who are each carriers of a specific genetic disorder and they don't want to pass that down to their children. So for example, I mean, classic example, you have a Jewish couple, they both carry Tay-Sachs. Okay, and they don't want a baby with Tay-Sachs because they know the horrible implications. You have an African-American couple, and they both have sickle cell trait. They don't want a baby with sickle cell disease.
I just had a couple with cystic fibrosis.
Sure.
They each carried a trait for cystic fibrosis.
Same thing. And the funny thing about cystic fibrosis, when I was in medical school, I don't know about you, but I'm probably older than you, but when I was in medical school, okay, I was taught that cystic fibrosis, it was like the match game. There were very few genetic mutations that had been identified at that time for cystic fibrosis. And we were taught that the man and the woman each had to have the exact same mutation in order to have a baby that was affected. We know now that that's totally not correct. And we also know that there are hundreds of mutations now that have been discovered for cystic fibrosis. So if you've got a woman who has, for example, the Delta F508 mutation, which is the most common mutation, the point mutation for cystic fibrosis.
And these are little genes on the chromosomes.
Correct.
They're very tiny. These are things that are very hard for, I think, the layperson to understand. But it's a tiny, it's almost like a little pimple like on your finger.
Right. Okay. So, for example, a genetic, I mean, you know, we liken it to like an apartment or apartment building, or we liken it to like a book. Okay, so if you look at the book is all of the DNA, it's all of the chromosomes that you have in your body. Okay, then you can have a chapter, and a chapter is a specific gene. Okay, the specific gene on each chromosome, and there are between 5 and 25,000 genes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so you have a specific gene on a specific chromosome, and then you can have words within those chromosomes, which are the individual base pairs that are run together, and then you can have individual letters.
Right.
So you can have one letter in an entire book that is out of order.
Right.
Or it's the wrong letter. There's a typo, for example.
Right.
And because of that, you can have a baby with sickle cell anemia.
Correct.
And so what
I like the way you describe it. I'm going to steal that.
You can steal it. But we have the ability now to read the entire book, not just look at the book, which is what we used to be able to do and say, hey, look, there's a book there. And then we got to have the ability to say, well, now look, you know, there's chapters within this book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we have the ability to actually read every single letter of every single word in every single sentence in every single chapter of the book. And that's what's really so fascinating, because this technology allows us to identify which letters are correct and which letters are therefore are incorrect and therefore likely to cause disease in babies.
Right. So this is the pre-genetic. This is the PGD.
This is the same technology that can be used for each.
Right.
The specific thing I was just discussing was PGD, where you're looking at diagnosis. So you know that Susie Smith has sickle cell trait, and you know that John Smith has sickle cell trait, and they don't want a baby with sickle cell disease.
Right. So you really have to go back even further, where I do counsel testing and see if what if there's a carrier state. If mom and then and or dad is carrying this trait of one of these umpteen million diseases that there are. So now we're back there.
Right.
And then you come in and now what are you going to do? So now what is PGT?
So PGS,
screening.
which is screening. So PGD is pre-implantation genetic diagnosis.
Gotcha.
PGS is screening. So now we've got a couple. We've done our counsel testing or our Good Start genetic testing or all the other myriad of tests that are out there.
But
we screened a couple. We realized that they're not carriers of specific disorders.
Correct.
Yet, even though they're not carriers of specific disorders, maybe they've had 3 or 4 or 5 miscarriages or 10 miscarriages. Or maybe they've gone through in vitro fertilization several times and just haven't been able to get pregnant.
Okay? Right.
Mm-hmm. So what we then do is we can actually look at the chromosomes within the embryo.
Oh, this is more where you're really looking at the chapters.
Correct. So instead of looking at the letters in the sentence, we can actually look at the sentence or we can look at the chapter.
Right.
And we can determine, we can look at the chromosomes and say, you know what? This embryo looks beautiful under a microscope.
Mm-hmm.
But look what's happened when you look at the chromosomes of that embryo. There's an extra number 21 there. That embryo's got Down syndrome.
Right.
So maybe it would be born alive. Maybe that baby would live to be 50, 60 years old. Maybe that baby would be mildly affected, or maybe that baby would be severely affected.
Right.
There's no way to really know yet.
Mm-hmm.
But we can have other disorders where we've got a baby that's got an embryo that has trisomy 13 or 15 or 18.
Right.
You know, things that are not compatible with life.
Right.
And the question is, should we transfer those embryos, just, you know, close our eyes and jump into the water and transfer those embryos and you know, say to the patient, well, you know, I'm sorry that you're probably not going to be able to carry that pregnancy, but, you know, you need to carry it anyway. That's what we used to do when we didn't test these embryos. We would just put embryos in.
Right.
But now that we know that, we can avoid transferring those abnormal embryos.
Right.
And so, therefore, patients don't get pregnant and miscarry.
Mm-hmm.
So what this does, what pre-implantation genetic testing, being able to combine these two things,
mm-hmm.
what pre-implantation genetic testing allows us to do is we can identify normal embryos, chromosomally normal embryos.
Right.
And so there's a higher chance for pregnancy,
right.
a lower risk of miscarriage,
correct.
A higher chance for delivery. And here's the kicker.
Mm-hmm.
What there is now, we can apply this technology. So what we can do now is we can transfer only one embryo at a time
right.
because we know that that embryo is normal.
Right.
And what that does is it eliminates all the horror.
The significance
show.
Of multiple pregnancies.
Eliminates triplets completely.
Yes.
99.7% elimination of twins.
Right. Yeah.
And when you look at the cost of the healthcare system, everybody's so concerned about the cost of the healthcare system. Twins, you know, a singleton runs about, you know, gives or take, you know, different parts of the country, it can vary by thousands of dollars, but the average across the United States, about $15,000 to deliver a singleton. It's about $150,000 to $180,000 to deliver twins, and it's about $400,000 to deliver triplets, assuming that they're all healthy and everything goes well. Because if things go south, you know, you've got lifetime cost of care.
Absolutely. The prematurity, the preterm labor, you know, the prematurity for the baby, the babies, the twin-twin transfusions, the, you know, the problems that are going to go on with the twins themselves.
Sure.
And then the mother.
Sure.
The diabetes, the high blood pressure, the preterm labor, you know, the bed rest, the loss of work. You know, it's just all of that expense just seems to add up.
Absolutely. So,
I'm just going to throw the number out, okay, which is 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. I'm speaking with Dr. Kaelin Silverberg. Is that Silverberg?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And right. You are the associate professor at the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the Division of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School. Is that correct?
It's Dell now.
So, and also you are the medical director of Texas Fertility Center and medical director at Austin IVF?
At
what? At Austin Ovation.
Ovation Fertility.
Okay, in Austin IVF. Yeah. It's this paper that's over here that's separated from this. Anyway, if you have a questions regarding, I guess, pre-genetic testing, genetic determination, genetic screening, if you're having issues with multiple miscarriage and there's a problem or you have an age-related issue, give us a call. Again, we are at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. And I have a caller from New York. I have Bruce on the line. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am. Can you hear me okay? I'm sorry, I'm on a Bluetooth.
Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear?
Absolutely.
So my question is, and I'm all in favor of screening out and preventing passing on face acts and sickle cell trait. It's just, is there any ethical review? At what point do we say, oh, you know what, let's favor blue-eyed children as opposed to brown-eyed? And it just sounds like we're almost on a slippery slope with that. And, you know, it's almost sounding like almost pre-eugenics.
Sure. And I totally agree with what you're saying. In fact, we had these exact same struggles years ago with just the basics of the technology, because if we go a step back, you know, the question is, are we going to damage these embryos? Are we potentially going to damage normal embryos by trying to determine what the chromosomes are like in those embryos? So we did those studies and we realized that, in fact, pre-implantation genetic testing could, I mean, theoretically you could damage an embryo, but the odds of that now are so low. Our embryologists are so accomplished that they can accomplish this very easily with minimal to no damage to these embryos. So to move on to the specific question that you're asking, we have absolutely no interest in doing things like you're suggesting. So, for example, you know, populating the world with blonde-haired, blue-eyed babies, or, you know, babies that are destined to be tall and, you know, male and therefore maybe would excel in basketball. We have no desire to do those things, and those are things that we actually don't screen for. So what we do screen for are we screen for the chromosome numbers, and we screen at the moment for basically the 23 different genetic disorders that are recommended that we screen for by the American College of OB-GYN and by the American Council of Medical Genetics. And those are the tests that we really are looking for. In addition, we do have some families that come forward with very obscure diseases, but they have unfortunately lost family members going back for generations. And now, because the Human Genome Project has cracked the code for DNA, we're actually able to make probes looking for those specific genetic disorders. And we're then able to tell the couple, embryo number one is a normal male. Embryo number two is a normal female. Embryo number three is a male that has this disease. Okay, embryo four is a female that has this disease. And we leave the issue up to the couple as to what they want to do. So at Texas Fertility and at Ovation Fertility, we've got very strict ethical guidelines. We do not discard embryos that are compatible with life. So, for example, a Down syndrome embryo, a couple may not want to have a baby with Down syndrome, but because that embryo is compatible with life, and because Down syndrome babies have been reported to live long, healthy, satisfying lives for them or for their families, we refuse to discard those embryos.
Right. And, you know, I think that there are a lot of ethical issues. I thought it was an interesting question.
Sure.
Because wasn't there a book called The Boys from Brazil?
Right. And book and a movie.
A book and a movie.
Right.
And that's sort of when he sort of asked that question. Then you went blonde haired, blue eyes. I went like, whoa.
Right. Because that's, you know, the classic question.
That's the classic question, really. Right. And, you know, I know people talk about they want to have a female or they want to have a male baby. It's almost like designer. I think they were talking about that. Were you on TV about that? Designer babies?
Yeah, some programs or some IVF programs will actually do family balancing, or they will do genetic selection. I personally don't do IVF if the only reason that you're going to do it is to determine if you want a male or a female.
Exactly.
Now, the caveat to that is there are certain X-linked disorders. So, for example, there are certain disorders that can be transmitted to only male children, for example.
Correct.
And a couple may want a female to avoid that problem. That's a totally different issue.
My patient is going today for her IVF.
Sure.
She's having an IVF cycle, and her dad has scapulomuscle-facial muscular dystrophy. So I'm not sure. I guess she must be carrying the trait because he has it. He's, over the years, he's become, he's a physician over the years.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's X-linked disorder.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
so what would happen is if she has the trait,
okay,
she has two X chromosomes.
Yes.
So there is a risk that she would pass on the X chromosome.
Recessive.
Right. So she's got one normal X and one abnormal X.
Right.
Her male children will get that X chromosome from her.
Right.
So there's a 50-50 chance that they would have the disease.
Right.
And there's no X chromosome that they get from their father to balance that out.
Correct.
But on the other hand, her female children would get either her affected X or her normal X.
Correct.
But they would have a corresponding X from the father
that
would balance that out. So the worst that would happen if she has a female child is there's a 50-50 chance that female child would be a carrier just like she is.
Right.
And a 50-50 chance that female child would not have the disease, would not be a carrier, and would no longer be able to pass that disease on.
Right.
And that's the cool thing about this technology, because we can eradicate disease. And when I say eradicate, I mean do away with completely, forever, for families who've had histories of for generation after generation, specific disease.
Right. And the beauty of that was, I think, I'm just going to go back and sort of say crazy things. So, if you did amniocentesis years ago, we almost gotten rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you knew that you had muscular dystrophy in your family, you would actually abort the males and then you would only have females. But now you don't have to do that.
You don't.
Because you can actually just check to see,
and
you could choose not to abort at all. But I'm just saying, you could find the male that and implant that male in there.
And it's really amazing because so many people so many people who are pro-life,
mm-hmm.
have so many concerns about this technology,
right? Yes, I think that there's a lot of issue about
that. I turned this around. This is the ultimate pro-life technology.
Exactly.
Because now we've eliminated
pain
the risk.
And suffering.
You don't have to do
disease.
An abortion. You don't have to terminate a pregnancy because we can prevent that pregnancy from occurring because we know in advance that embryo is not going to be able to survive.
Correct.
And there's no reason to put a woman through a pregnancy to carry a pregnancy that we know is destined to either miscarry or die a horrible death, usually, in the first week or two or month.
Or a long-suffering or a life that's several years that's long and suffering for everyone involved.
Sure.
And, you know, then I always say, it's terrible what I say is it's a lot of roadkill because, you know, a lot of people suffer, you know, the parents, the grandparents, the relatives, the child itself, the siblings, nothing is easy with that. And I think that you're right. I think it eliminates a lot of that. I do have some interesting questions. Amy from Phoenix.
Hi,
how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My daughter is all set to deliver within the next 2 weeks. She went for her normal everyday checkups with the doctor and had her blood work done. And they had originally told her that she was a she had a baby who had trisomy 18. They went back, they did all kinds of ultrasounds, and they did the amniocentesis, and came back and said, no, that she didn't have it. It's a female child. My question is, actually three questions. Is this child predestined to have problems in the future as far as, say, ADHD or learning or something along those lines? Second question being, should she have genetic testing before having any other children? And I'm sorry, I'm nervous. I forgot the third question.
Well, I think you have a handful. I think you have plenty of good questions here that we can answer, and hopefully sure. That'll come back to you. I was a little confused. Did she have a miscarriage, or did she have a baby before, or did someone tell her that this baby had trisomy 18?
Through her normal everyday blood work.
Okay. I think what you're saying is she had blood tests, and the screening blood test showed an increased risk for trisomy 18. And that's very different than really having a baby with trisomy 18. I'm going to let Dr. Silverberg explain that to you.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
All right.
Well, first of all, congratulations, because it sounds like you're in 2 weeks going to have a healthy baby.
Yes.
Or healthy granddaughter. So what happens is, well, that's even a bigger deal.
Yes.
So you have to understand there's different levels of testing. And each level of testing tests different material. So, for example, what your daughter had, once she was pregnant, they tested her blood looking for fetal DNA that had made its way into her blood. So in English, what does that mean? That means that some cells from the baby, some red cells, some white blood cells, maybe some epithelial cells, had made it into your daughter's circulatory system. There is now very advanced screening that allows us to identify those cells and pull those cells out, and those cells can then be tested. The problem is, it's called non-invasive prenatal testing. And the reason it's called non-invasive is because all they have to do to get that test done is to draw your daughter's blood. They didn't have to do an amniocentesis where they stick a needle through her abdominal wall into the sac of fluid around the baby. They didn't have to do CVS where they actually put a catheter through your daughter's vagina into the cervix, into the uterus, and take a little piece of placental tissue. Those are much more invasive
techniques.
No, yes, because
eventually they did.
Because the non-invasive test was positive, but that is a screening test. It doesn't tell you definitively that there's something wrong with the baby. It's just saying that the blood is indicating that maybe there's a possibility, so we have to look further.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
So screening tests are developed. It's like, for example, I'm going to give you a silly analogy, okay? Say that you want to fish for tuna, okay? And you go off the coast of California and you drop a huge net. You can either drop a line in with bait that tuna like, and you can fish for a specific tuna, or you can drop a huge net in. And when you pull that big net into the boat, you're going to have some tuna, but you're going to have some mackerel. You may have some salmon. You may have some...
From Austin, Texas.
Right. Well, the screening test allows you... She understands. This is an intelligent woman from Phoenix. I love Phoenix.
Now we're getting her... She's really getting into this.
Right.
Now.
Well, that's good.
But see, I know. I love
so
that.
So the screening test allows you to identify babies with trisomy 18, but unfortunately, it's going to falsely identify babies that are normal and say that maybe that baby's at higher risk for trisomy 18. So what your daughter's doctor then very astutely did was she said to your daughter, you know what? This test is showing that you may have an increased risk of trisomy 18. We need to go to the next level.
We need to be sure.
Right. We need to find out for sure if she does or not. And what they probably did was an amniocentesis, where they can take, instead of a couple of cells out of your daughter's blood, now they can take maybe hundreds of cells out from the fluid, from the sac around the baby, and they can test those. That is much, much more accurate. And if that test says she does not have trisomy 18, you can pretty much take it to the bank that she does not have trisomy 18.
Right on. But, and that's exactly what happened. But now that she doesn't have the trisomy 18, does that make the baby predestined for other problems such as ADHD or learning disabilities?
No, that's not predictive.
One thing has nothing to do with the other.
But nice try, buddy.
Right, but the unfortunate thing is that at this point in time in 2016, we don't have the gene yet that codes, if there is such a gene, we don't have the gene that codes for ADHD or ADD. Now, maybe one day we will, and then we'll be able to know in advance if embryos are predestined to develop that condition or not. But right now, there is no such gene, and so there is no such test. But you can rest assured that your granddaughter has no increased risk over any other baby of having ADD or ADHD or anything else related to that.
Any other learning disabilities?
Correct.
Okay, so I feel so much better. I'm so glad. You see, you didn't understand. That's the problem. You took it too much to heart, but that is what it was. That was a screening test, and then your daughter had a diagnostic test, and that diagnostic test overrides that screening test. You went the next step. It told you that everything was fine. It's like doing a